The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Friday morning, and welcome to another end of the week edition of Analyze This here on your NPR station in the U.S. Virgin Islands, WTJX FM, with yours truly, Neville James. It is a gorgeous day in paradise. You can literally see Tortola, man. You know what I'm saying? That's how clear this thing is. I don't call it high visibility, but this is high definition for real, though. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm talking about. And we got the man himself, Kyle Fleming, here in the studio. We got mid-month edition of the Power Hour. What's up, man?
Morning. I'm good. I'm here looking at this beautiful day with you and watching how flat the water is. You can't just see Tortola, but if you had a boat, you could be there.
When I came over the top of the hill, they just moved me content. That was like, yesterday was nice. I was expecting it went from Wednesday afternoon. But it didn't materialize Wednesday afternoon. But yesterday, man, I started seeing it. And today, it's even clearer. I mean, This is ridiculous how beautiful this place is. You know what I'm saying? But we love it. This is paradise. We're going to call San Juan and talk with the weather service for a little bit. Find out if it's going to remain like this for the foreseeable future. So, you couldn't pick a better week to come on this show with all of the run-ins that are going now with Wapa. You know what I'm saying?
I was midway through the week, I was like, I know this is because like this is gonna be it's like and we, not only is it on this week, but we planned for 2 hours. I was like, man, Neville must have had some type of foreshadowing in mind.
Well, I was supposed to be out in the territory 2 Fridays ago. When I got to the airport that Thursday afternoon, I done cancel my flight and push me back to the next day. But I had business run-ins to deal with that Friday, so it didn't make no sense to me to go. So I pushed back my trip, so I believe in a couple of weeks. Then last week, when we were supposed to do it, I heard you were testifying in front of Congress?
Yeah. We actually had myself and Greg Winnell from the Caribbean Green Technology Center testified in front of one of the subcommittees on natural resources and energy, specifically relative to energizing the territories.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually had a great opportunity to discuss a lot of the funding, a lot of the programs, a lot of the Biden administration's initiatives and how they've been affecting the territory was the intent of the not just the testimony, but the discussion that followed.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly a great experience, really, really appreciative of the invitation and opportunity to represent the Virgin Islands on that stage and really provide, a firsthand account of, where we are, where we're going, and how the resources that are being made available to us are enabling that.
Guanel seems like a cool dude, man.
Yeah, Greg's great. We've been working, and Jobs have been working with him on everything from the energy fair to some research and data collection, and as well as a comprehensive energy strategy as well. I mean, we work very closely with that team. It's nice to have a balance of policy and academia. And so to have that on that stage as well was kind of a perfect combination.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. We got the weather service on the line. Good morning. Who am I speaking with?
Gidiana Sayas.
Excuse me?
Gidiana Sayas.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well. The weather is perfect up here in the Virgin Islands. Is it the same in San Juan?
Yes. Right now, yes. It's pretty good all around the island, but in the afternoon we're expecting some weather, mainly across the interior here in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But what about Vieques and Culebra?
Vieques and Culebra, it's supposed to stay better. They actually have, let me see something here really quick.
Mm-hmm.
In the afternoon they can see some rain, but in the morning hours it should stay pretty good. In the afternoon they can have some rain as well as the islands, but it should stay less than here in the main island. But yeah, of course, you can. You have the probability to see some rain, Vieques, Culebra, as well as San Croix and St. Thomas today.
What about the weekend? What are we looking at for tomorrow and Sunday?
So tomorrow it looks better for the islands. Let me see here. During the morning, you can have some isolated showers. And then in the afternoon, you actually have less chance. You only have like 20 chance of precipitation. And then for the night, tomorrow night, again, you have some scattered possibility for scattered showers. But in general, it should stay... not that bad.
Okay, that's good. So scattered showers, there's a possibility for scattered showers, but that's pretty much it?
Yes. That's for tomorrow. And Sunday, it seems like you have a better chance in the afternoon for Sunday. You have like 60 chance of precipitation.
Mm-hmm. 60% chance of rain on Sunday afternoon?
Yes. That's correct.
Okay.
Afternoon and during the night.
Yeah. Can we get a marine advisory for our boaters and our beachgoers, please?
What was that? Sorry?
Can we get a marine advisory for our boaters and beachgoers?
So right now, let me see. The wave heights in that area are around 2 to 3 feet for... today and as well tomorrow, and pretty much the same for Sunday.
Okay.
And the rip current right now, it's supposed to stay moderate through the weekend, so that's not like like the thresholds for small craft, for example. But yeah, our recommendation, it's we are still in moderate risk, which that means rip currents are possible near the area. So yeah, we tend to say people just, stay caution in the waters. But for now, that's not like thresholds for small craft or those kind of advisories.
Mm-hmm, okay. Alrighty. Well, thank you very much and enjoy the weekend.
Thank you. You too as well.
Okay, good. That's the weather service down there in San Juan. Looks like we got a nice weekend coming up. Supposed to be better tomorrow. I want to be better than this.
Hey, a long weekend, a hot week. It'd be a perfect time to get on the water, so I'm making those accommodations.
Yeah. This really is something to behold. How lovely this place is, you know what I'm saying? So we good. So let's get right to it now. Let me explain your situation. You are the energy office director, and you serve as the chairman of the Virgin Islands Water and Power Authority governing board. Correct.
Yes, correct.
Okay, good. How many members on the board?
Right now, we've actually recently added 2 members over the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. So we're currently at 6.
6. If you're fully complimented. This thing's still in court?
Still
a legal issue with what the legislature wants and what the governor believes he deserves?
There certainly, yes. I think that it's still ongoing. I know they had a recent... I won't say a judgment, but I know there have been some recent proceedings relative to that. I'll say this, one of the key, areas of the, even what the legislation was trying to push for, was for the prerequisites for, professional prerequisites or experience prerequisites for board members. And, the last 2 members who have joined, both come, as you met before, Lionel Selwood is a esteemed engineer and former CEO and COO of various spectrums of energy industry corporations, and also the most recent addition is Maurice Mawe. He's a former energy office. You used to work for the energy office and currently worked for the state of Missouri State Energy Office, and actually has his own and recently started his own energy consulting firm as well. So, it's one of those type of interesting things where we have a kind of legislation that's been forced down to try to force certain kind of experience prerequisites, but even without that being fully instated, still being in kind of proceedings, we're already complimenting, we're already fulfilling a lot of those expectations just through the organic nature of how we've always tried to ensure the makeup of the board represents a, you know, diverse energy focus, both from a technical, financial, and even legal standpoint as well.
So you're the chairman. Ms. Young still on the board?
Yes.
She's the secretary. Tombo still on the board?
Yes, vice president.
Boyens Jackson still on the board?
Yes.
Selwood?
Yes.
So that's five. And then you say you added two more, so you got seven then?
No, I added one more. Well, two. Lionel was included in the two. Lionel was included in the
Liga.
Lionel was included in the two.
That. Oh, Selwood. Okay, yeah. Selwood. Okay, Selwood. Yeah. Okay. So that brought him on. And what's his name?
Maurice Mwawe. Yeah.
Okay. He's a private sector member?
Yes.
Okay. Because it had with the five members listed here, Fleming, Young, Turnbull, Jackson, and Selwood, you had five.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had two public sector vacancies and a private sector vacancy.
Yeah, so we haven't had any public sector outside of myself, because that was part of the legislation. Was the only government or only cabinet member that would remain on the board would be the energy office director.
Would be the energy office director. Okay, so right now you got six. Who would break a tie? I would have to go back to it again and more debate and try to get, if it was a 3-3 vote, try to get one of the threes to swing at one side or the other.
Well, you know, I would say it's not so much a try to swing as it is to have a you know, hearty debate on the issues facing the authority.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the hope is always that we can come to consensus, but that's one of the reasons why we have a, you know, a democratic structure in the voting process.
No, I got a problem with that. Sometimes your membership number is even. I mean, it happens in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to get 435. If somebody can't make it, then you go. The roll call goes with 434.
Right.
Down here is 14. So same thing with our legislature. So
I would say more often than not, people
resigning left and right from Congress in record numbers. So
that's true.
That number, you know, that even odd dynamic is something they got to deal with on a regular basis. Now, The authority is a member of the American Public Power Association,
mm-hmm.
the American Water Works Association, the Caribbean Electric Utility Service Corporation, and the Caribbean Water and Wastewater Association. Mm-hmm. So we got some good membership in terms of entities who understand the need for some utilities here in the Virgin Islands, in the Caribbean and America.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I can speak to one thing in terms of the those associations and kind of understand what they mean for the territory. Kind of the perfect example is APPA was instrumental in especially the post-storm recovery and in assisting the authority with coordinating and identifying both immediate support relative to the restoration, and then also, if I don't know if you remember, there was in a lot of the years following the storms, you heard of the team NYPA, the New York Power Authority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were also very instrumental in helping add some additional technical coordination capacity to the authority. All this came as through being a member of APPA. So, you know, these associations aren't just, they're definitely not just title or names or group that we're a part of. They actually have very material impacts and provide valuable resources. You know, they've acknowledged, you know, our communications team for us, you know, their work, and they've worked closely with the coordinating trainings for linemen, as well as IT assessments for our cybersecurity assessments for the utility as well. So we really leverage, though, especially the American Public Power is a heavily leveraged resource for the technical capacity that they bring in different forms, both to expanding our workforce, improving our workforce, and also improving our operations overall.
That's good. Well, you need that communication.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because you could get very valuable referrals from being a member in these associations.
Yes.
That people may have gone through in the past what you are going through in the present. and that could allow for you because experience matters. You know what I'm saying?
It's all about flattening the learning curve, right? We don't have to go through the rigors of the early stages and get straight to the meat. That's all. Yeah, cool.
That's what we're talking about. Now I see the Wastewater Association, the Caribbean Water and Wastewater Association, CWWA. Waste management authorities are part of that as well?
I would assume they are, but I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, but I would assume they would be.
Yeah. And if they're not, we would recommend that they do.
Yeah. Because WABA doesn't deal with the wastewater directly. Obviously, when we're coordinating, lime work and stuff like that, there's overlap. But I would imagine that we both would likely be a part of that, but I wouldn't want to speak without actually assurance.
Okay, that's good. That's good. By the way, I attended that meeting yesterday. The community meeting that
the EPA,
it was well attended.
Okay, good.
Good meeting, and some issues came up. It's good to see residents wanting to voice their opinions and let the entities know what was there. Commissioner Oreo was there. The waste management was there. Louis Sylvester and Daryl Griffin were there. Zenobain from EPA.
Yep,
and they got one more entity. I mentioned DPNR.
WAPA Watershed.
Watershed was there. Some legitimate questions. And I think this is a good move by the EPA to get a community involved and to allow for community involvement to the extent that they're actually talking to the decision makers. Mm-hmm. So I want to commend them for that as well.
I think the EPA has been, I would say this in the early days of my tenure in government. The EPA wasn't necessarily even for, just specifically from the energy office standpoint, wasn't an entity that we engaged with as much. But under the Biden administration, they've really utilized the EPA and funded the EPA in a lot of unique ways, especially as it pertains to energy. I know last night's discussion wasn't necessarily specifically to energy, but in terms of the type of funding opportunities that the EPA has been kind of bolstered with and then administrating to across the nation, but specifically for the Virgin Islands as well. I mean, we talk a lot about the Solar for All competitive grant, $100 million Solar for All grant that we're still awaiting a verdict on. But even just having pots of funds like that to go after, especially under the EPA flag, is something that we never used to have an opportunity to pursue before. Mm-hmm. We actually have pollution reduction implementation grant from the EPA that we're actually applying for at the beginning of May, which is a $1 to $25 million grant, which covers a wide spectrum of everything from the transportation sector to the power system sector. Another major funding source under the EPA. There is a community change grant that is really more so for the nonprofit sector that they have access to. So the EPA under the Biden administration has really, again, expanded a wide portfolio of opportunities that the Virgin Islands is pursuing on multiple different fronts. So definitely kudos to their team, and Zeno and Claude have been certainly great advocates for the Virgin Islands in that process.
You're listening to the Power Hour here on Analyze This. We'll take a break. Be back right after this.
Bank of St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
Weekday mornings are a juggle, sometimes even a struggle. Morning Edition from NPR News eases you into your day and keeps you company through the chaos of a busy morning. Hear interviews that give you context on the day's biggest stories, along with reporting and updates on the latest breaking news. Stay on top of the world with Morning Edition every weekday.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Human beings have been making music for tens of thousands of years. It brings us together. It has the power to communicate emotions and ideas. It's a profound part of the human experience. Hear the stories behind the music you love and new music you might fall in love with. I'm Raina Duras. Join me for in-depth interviews with artists who are continuing that musical history on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we are not afraid to stand up to the high and mighty like Jeff Bezos.
He had that big cowboy hat on. He looked like a shrink ray had hit Garth Brooks.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join me as we speak truth to power, at least until power agrees to buy us out, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
I'm back here. I analyze this with the power of all. We got Kyle Fleming here in the studio. So I want to give some details from yesterday's meeting. There was a topic that came up as it relates to the cost of managing waste and the creation of the Waste Management Authority. And Louis Sylvester tried his best to give the history as to the fees that the Waste Management Authority was expected, right? Trying to figure out if the Waste Management Authority was singular there or plural, so if I use was or were, right? Expected to implement, to allow for its existence, for the service that it provides. So I'm going to go back down the road a little bit here now and give some history, because he missed out a key detail yesterday, right? He mentioned that the reality about the implementation of fees coupled with the political dynamics tend to undermine the ability for these fees to be implemented. And he's correct with that. But one part that he left out, right, was, and you were probably just graduating from high school. What, 2002 or 2006?
2006.
2006. So you were still in high school when it was created, 2003, 2004. We had a sewage problem here on St. Croix in particular, right? Down here in the LBJ area, right? That pump station there was acting up. Judge Moore, I think it was, repeatedly called on the leadership. At the time, it was the Turnbull administration. They had inherited, you know, infrastructure that they had a problem with. And they wouldn't listen. Mm-hmm. So Judge Moore had to, you know, lay the hammer down on them. And that's how the Waste Management Authority was created. All waste and infrastructure prior to that was the responsibility of the Department of Public Works. Right?
Right.
But that was the consent decree. You know, literally, you know, made clear that they were failing in that, in that area, and we need to do something different. So it came at a cost. What Louis Sylvester didn't mention yesterday, which, you know, I can understand you're trying to let the public know what's going on, was that the creation of the Waste Management Authority coincided with the acronym known as LIAC becoming a household term, right? We're paying this LIAC. When in fact, they've been ratepayers, but we've been paying a fuel bill all along. It just didn't have this fancy levelized energy adjustment clause name, right? So we were feeling the pinch of that. This is 2003, 2004, right? So it wasn't just politically untenable, right? I make sure I go use big words when I'm talking to you. your vocabulary is so, you and Zeno being, you got this Ivy League vocabulary, even though I didn't go to no Ivy League school. You went to MIT and you went to
Lehigh,
right? You've been in Lehigh Valley, right? It was just fundamentally wrong at the time, given the cost of living, right? Because of our WAPA, our electricity and water bill, to actually expect the ratepayers, the consumers, to pay another fee that is justified. I'll make that clear. Because you got to pay for a service. That's what's going on.
That's,
you know what I mean?
That's always at the core of all these conversations.
Yeah,
but
yeah. You know what I mean? So I don't want to mislead the public into thinking that that wasn't the expectation, because it was. The problem, Kyle Fleming, and this is why I want this discussion to be centered around today, was that if we fix our energy cost problem, our WAPA issue, then this unlocks so many other things, specifically the ability for the Waste Management Authority to do what they were vested to do, which is to implement fees for the services that they are providing. So, there's main question number one. Are we ever going to get to the point, because you mentioned grants earlier and all that stuff, where we can get to a financial level as relates to costs for providing energy to the people of the Virgin Islands that the Waste Management Authority could implement the fees for the services they are vested and statutorily obligated to implement for the service they provide?
I'll understand a couple of different ways. One, the start is that I feel like there's a bit of a understanding the burdens and constantly trying to shield from the burdens and wanting and having sent a prerequisite of one becoming tenable, as you say, to then allow another to be implemented. I think that in of itself is a little bit of a tricky reality, right? Because I think a lot of what we do in terms of trying to shield, like I think what I'll say this, I think a lot oftentimes in trying to shield the community from the realities of these the high cost of these operations, we end up in these scenarios where there's shortfalls that exist in the operation that then make the services more difficult to deliver, and I think it's a big challenge. I get it that there's already a lot of costs. The reality is the high cost of living in a remote island nation, whether it's waste, energy, consumer goods, accessing consumer goods. Like these are the cost of being disconnected from the economies of scale that come with every other, large, whether it be infrastructure, supply chain, logistics, all that. That's just inherent. We do a lot to try to shield the community from those realities, but it's that in itself, it becomes untenable, because then again, you have a service provider like Waste Management that can't really collect, but they're running vehicles, they're paying employees, they're operating facilities that have high cost power needs. Like those parts of their business don't change the same way from the utility standpoint. Like the cost of our business doesn't change outside of mainly without fuel cost changes, and so those costs are fixed. Those costs are inherent. And if you're not compensated for those costs, and if we're kind of setting these prerequisites to allow us to, be compensated for those services, then you kind of just continue that cycle. And even if you shield for, 20 years, but you think of what you lose in that 20 years of, investment into improving the services that you offer. Like, so I guess what I'm saying is I have some concerns with the prerequisite nature of it, just because I don't think it's not really a true reflection of what's going on relative to that operation. And if we keep on kind of going that shielding route, it's an issue. But let's take that aside. I mean, certainly with all the advancements that we're working through right now, and I think ultimately you ask, it's not a question of if, it's really a question of when. And I think oftentimes I know the appetite for the transition or all these solutions and the immediacy, the desire for it, like the immediacy. I think we've talked about it before, that instant gratification of relief is a tough thing that it just isn't inherent to what we're trying to accomplish. I had a conversation with a friend last week when they asked, like, you know, is this ever gonna change? And I told him, I was like, look, at the end of the day, it's like any island, state, country that you're reading about in the headlines, we've talked about it here before, that's absolutely in, you know, talking about how, you know, 100% this or you know complete improvement in reliability here, all these success stories, those things take time to evolve. We get the headlines, we get the you know, the Sports Center, you know, highlights at the end, but we're not getting the full process, right? Like, you know, you're not seeing what all of those places have done and how many years it took for them, from the investment, from the development, to get there. And I know that there's no way to ask people to be patient, right? I think the community has been patient forever. But I can say right now, especially given the foundation of things that are happening, both from the funding availability, changes the name. Because so much of what we talk about in terms of those shortfalls that come from trying to shield the community from the reality of the high cost of these operations, these funds are allowing us for us to invest in infrastructure, in efficiency, in alternative energy, in ways that we could have never afforded while operating at a shortfall. And I think that's what's a major difference in having the conversation today. You know, if we talk about, like, if we look at, like, where we are in terms of from the utility side, our debt services, you know, we were having to take out, you know, get financing to try to make some of these capital investments, you know, whereas now we're getting grant funds to be able to do that. That's a much better position to be in, because now we're not investing at then, which then just adds another cost stack. We're able to invest in ways that genuinely will, once executed, will genuinely reduce the impact to customer. So that's why I feel like the call for patience now, and not even that it needs to be that much, we're already making significant strides, whether it becomes for alternative energy to the new generation being underway in St. Thomas. So, like, there's a lot of things that are already in motion. I think the patience isn't, hey, wait for decades. We're far more in reach to be able to getting the cost in a position where it's far more tenable, far more palatable to the entire community. And if that then sets the domino effect of allowing other agencies to start being compensated, I'm confident we're going to get there. And we're closer now than we were 10 years ago, I can tell you that much.
Okay, good. Now, you mentioned something that's a fact that I want the public to know. Because we are detached, that means everything we generate is self-generating. Right?
Exactly.
Right? And that applies to every island entity, whether it be an island, an island nation, whatever you got, everything on your own, right? So that's why you can't really compare the cost of energy to the mainland. Crazy, it's a volume thing. They have the ability infrastructurally to set up grids, right, and all that stuff. So we can't complain that. But so I want to go back to October of 2008, right? You were in Lehigh then.
Second year, sophomore year.
Second year, Lehigh, right? Route 22. You know about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, good. That's my stomping grounds, and I like it over there, right? We had a bill. It was sponsored by Ronnie Russell. And I'm reading a source article. It says, controversial effort to shift LEAC to taxpayers stalls in Senate committee, right? And he said the original bill introduced by Ronald E. Russell and supported by some members of the Senate Minority Caucus, of which I was one, would have taxpayers purchase all the Water and Power Authority's fuel from Hovensa for the next 3 months, covering 100% of the LEAC fuel portion of utility customers' bill. After 3 months, taxpayers would cover everything above $30 a barrel. Thereafter, it would enjoin WAPA from disconnecting anyone's power for the next 3 months, order WAPA to convert to 40% renewable energy by 2011. This is 2024, we day now. And mandate an independent audit of WAPA, right? Nathan Simmons currently works for the administration, still at the PFA.
PFA.
Right? He was testifying as a senior policy advisor to Governor John DeYoung at the time. He said the bill simply shifts the obligation to pay for electric power generation and transmission from WAPA's broad customer base to the government and therefore the taxpayers of the Virgin Islands. I got a question to ask. In 2022, didn't the government of the Virgin Islands subsidize some of the WAPA costs on behalf of the people of the Virgin Islands?
Yes.
And how long that lasts for? That's still going on. That no longer going on.
I mean,
is the government making itself availing resources if need be from time to time to fill gaps?
Yeah, and I think I think in terms of the, I guess at the end of the day, yes. So there are multiple forms in which, there was a very direct subsidy, especially during the post-COVID times where there was significant there still are significant shortfalls in what's collected versus the cost of the operation and that shortfall was certainly subsidized to ensure and that's what's there's no debate, right?
It was about $7 million a month the government were paying?
No, it wasn't that much. I don't have the number off the top of my head. So I hate putting anything out there.
It was about 30% or 40%, right? It wasn't half of the amount, but it was.
It was really to cover the difference in the delta in the fuel cost.
Delta in the fuel cost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
But I think because remember this was also when we had the invasion, the Russian invasion.
Yeah. Yeah. You're
right. So remember the price of cut. I mean, everybody knew this, right? This isn't a question, right? You went to the gas station in St. John. It was probably almost $7 a gallon. St. Thomas was over $6.
Yeah.
We know the reality was there.
But the fact is the government stepped up on behalf of the people.
Well, I mean, this is what we try to communicate across the board. It's like, and why it's indisputable is that as much people, I'm sure nobody listening right now has enjoyed the result of their WAPA bill. But at the same time, despite, removing any billing errors, which we know exists, so I'm not going to, speak to that. That happens. The cost of the service we provided hasn't changed, right? And so the fact that the cost of our service hadn't changed during that time is the proof in the pudding to the type of subsidies that were being provided to allow us to maintain a consistent cost per unit of energy, where everywhere else, whether it be the Caribbean, anywhere else in the world that relied on fossil fuels, saw increases in the service, in charges of the services.
Can't deny that.
Because
we actually spoke to this, and they highlighted this in this article, right? Now, Lamborghini at the time outlined WAPA's progress towards power alternatives, saying negotiations with a trash-to-energy generator were in the final stages. He also said utility rates are beginning to come down with one LEAC reduction of 18% implemented. And we're going to get to that because I spoke with General Bain about this. And then a certain senator referenced Trinidad and a number of other Caribbean nations are currently subsidizing utility bills for the residents because at the time, the price of oil had ballooned to nearly $150 a barrel in July of 2008. So we take a break on that note. And when we come back, right, we're going to speak about the ability for the Water and Power Authority, given the most recent investment with the Wärtsilä's and what have you. If there's a solid timeline that you're looking at to address costs to the people of the Virgin Islands, we'll be back right after this.
Said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. I wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday. In these divided times, what could be more important than a conversation? Conversation with someone we don't know, someone we think we know, someone with whom we disagree or think we do. Join us as we ask questions of politicians, ranchers, parents, athletes, activists, gardeners, writers, and lots more. Then listen along with you.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTGX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, but it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
I'm Aisha Roscoe, host of Weekend Edition Sunday, where we're not just interested in what's going on in the world, but why it's happening and how. Details are important. So are different points of view. We're dedicated to bringing you the stories behind the big events and the small ones, too. Join us every Sunday morning for Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, Sundays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we're back here, analyze this, and we trending towards what we're dealing with now, which clearly is what the public want to get into, which is an announcement that was made last week with respect to rolling power outages, what have you, and all that stuff. But I want to make sure we get a background in place, because this thing is a 20-year deal we're dealing with. The Water and Power Authority did not, the current leadership did not inherit the problem. I'm not making an excuse for them. I'm just being as candid and as truthful as possible, right? Because I do want to ask a question with respect to current management in the second hour when we break down this issue. So we've established, number one, when you're an island, you got to self-generate, right? Mm-hmm. That's just the deal. That's number one. Number two, which requires revenue, right? And then number three, does the Water and Power Authority have enough customers to satisfy its revenue needs to provide water and power for the people of the Virgin Islands? I think that's the underlying question we're dealing with now. Because if people are shifting away from WAPA and generating on their own, yes, that's less of a burden for WAPA in terms of providing, right? But on the other hand, it's cutting down on revenue. And there's a minimum revenue requirement for the Water and Power Authority to function, right?
As long as you're applying, to answer your question quickly, there will always be enough customers as long as the appropriate rate for the services provided is collected.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
correct.
Like,
you're absolutely correct.
You can have all the customers. If you have 50,000 customers, but you're charging them 50% of what it costs you to do business, and no matter how many, whether it's 50,000 or a million,
the math does not allow for that to be sustainable.
Yes.
Okay. So I agree with that. I agree with that part. The cost of the commodity today, to the best of your knowledge, how much it costs in WAPA on an annual basis?
The fuel,
the combination of fuels that we use in.
The director has highlighted this on a number of occasions. I think it's a really key take home. If you think of the cost of the authority, what it costs for it to operate, over 70% of the authority's cost to operate is tied to fuel. 70% of it.
That number is, and you know what? That number was 71% in 2011. And this is just to show the public how peaks and valley. Like this industry is. And I mentioned this to Zeno Bean. July 2008, a barrel of oil, $147 a barrel. By December 2008, it was down to $28 a barrel. Mm-hmm. Right? You could do the math, right? You're taking off for $147 to $28, $119, right? $119 divided into $147, 80.9% reduction, right? That's significant,
yep.
Right? And by 2011, it was done back at $100 a barrel already, right? The WAPA leadership came to the to the legislature, had a meeting. I think Senator Lisa Chucky Hansen was chairing the meeting. She was the chair of the Government Operations Committee. And these were the numbers then. And I want you to tell me what the numbers are now. The big number to run the Water and Power Authority on an annual basis was $350 million, of which $250 million was the fuel bill. Five out of every $7 was fuel.
Hasn't changed much, right?
And this is 13 years later, right? No, so let me establish that. So we're still at that 70% fuel cost of 100% operational cost.
Yes.
Reality and structure right now.
And let's think of it like this, right? If we look at, just take that timeline, right? And then also look at what's occurred at the authority. Like we haven't made outside of shifting our fuel supply and adding more propane to the mix as opposed to just purely diesel. You know, while we're close to getting our our Wärtsilä's online in St. Thomas, and there've been some incremental improvements to the generation there, we haven't did a 180 on our generation profile from then to now. So the fact that cost is similar shouldn't really be taken as a surprise, because we haven't completed all of the transformational shifts that would allow for that number to be skewed, or that ratio to be lowered substantially in that period of time. So like just mm-hmm. to be clear, like, you know, because I think everyone thinks that oftentimes people are like, well, it was bad that, you know, 10 years ago. But I was like, well, if your roof was leaking 10 years ago and you haven't patched it in 10 years, to expect the roof isn't going to stop leaking, it's unrealistic, right? Mm-hmm. Like something has to change, and like time doesn't fix any of these problems. If anything, time actually leads to further deterioration, especially if left unaddressed. And so I was trying to make sure people don't think that just because time has gone on, and yes, the people think, oh, well, they got this money, they got this fund, so I imagine that things should be relief. Again, we're talking about shortfalls and costs and operation. While change, like there has been the material changes, while they are well within reach, mm-hmm. they haven't all come to the to complete fruition where that ratio would be skewed, but we are well in range of it.
Good. So we mentioned that July, $147 a barrel, right? On September 30th, this is an article. All I did was Google St. Thomas source, Hodge petitions PSC for reduction 2008, and about four stories came up, right? September 30th, 2008, WAPA proposal would reduce average electric bill 18%. So with oil prices declining from record highs earlier this year, the executive director of the Virgin Islands Water and Power Authority, Hugo Hodge Jr., presented WAPA's governing board Tuesday with a plan to reduce the customer fuel surcharge on the territory's electric ratepayers by 21.5%, which is significant. Anytime you could do that, right? That means for every $100, right, that you go pay, now you're paying $78.50, right? 21.5 gone. This is September 30th or no? By November 13th, right, the PSC approved another 34% drop in LEAC rates. A good five, six weeks later. And they said this year's holiday, this is the language in the source article. This year's holiday season will be capped off at the beginning of next month with another decrease in LEAC rates, which was unanimously approved Wednesday by the Public Services Commission. It said effective December 1st. This thing's what happened. This is how rapid this thing was. Residents will see a 34% drop in LEAC rates per kilowatt hour, right? And they said the reduction reflects the continued drop in prices at the pumps, according to Hugo Hodge. Crude oil prices peaked in July at $147 per barrel and have since fallen about 60%, capping Tuesday at nearly $60 per barrel. So, this is November. We didn't even get to December part. Mm-hmm. What I tell you about, it went down even further, right? So, the point that I'm making is, WAPA must always educate the public as respect with respect to how are you to do business. WAPA is, at my understanding, 100% dependent on external forces as relates to the commodity.
Yes,
100%. Right.
I mean, if you want to call, if you want, in terms of providing the service we provide, yeah, we're 100% dependent on the commodity market to provide the services we provide.
Correct. Now we, how much of the generation is solar driven based on investments that we've made in the past? Ballpark figure. You got
the problem. Well, and that's where we try to. All right. So I want to make sure we're educating right correctly, because as it currently stands, the authority,
these solar fields and all that stuff.
We don't own them, so they're not investments. I can't call that an investment by us because we don't own that, right? So that's why I make sure.
You're telling the truth. You're telling the whole story,
right?
We might generate some costs, but because we don't own them, the costs are minimal.
Right. So, and we might, you know, yes, while we don't own them, yes, we do pay, technically a lower price for the energy that creates versus the cost of the, what it costs to generate from the fuel that we buy that's, burned through the generator we have. But those aren't, I just wouldn't call that an investment. We do have, they represent, in terms of the two solar fields, they probably represent in terms of like our peak demand, because we only have them available really between, the hours of 10 and 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
They maybe account for about, between 2-5% of the peak demand on a good, sunny, clear day, right?
So on a April 19, 2024 day.
Right. Yeah. And then it's always kind of a grain of salt, because, and that's why I say reliant, because we couldn't provide our service with just those, even close to just those services alone. We need to have the thermal generation as it currently stands fully available to be able to deliver across all four islands and to all reaches of our service
territory. Mm-hmm. So the you mentioned something about change. There's also insanity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where if you're looking for change and ain't doing nothing to effectuate change, then you're crazy.
Well,
I was using the colloquial language, right? But they said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But the second sentence that I recently heard, which actually kind of stuck with me, is that then the indication of sanity should be the mind's willingness to change.
Oh yes. So the question is. Is there a willingness in Virgin Islands leadership to change?
Absolutely.
As it relates to water and power?
There is 100%. And I think that's the proof in that pudding is very clear in the...
How much money I need to fix our problem? Huh? Is money the problem?
That answer is never going to be that simple. But I mean, yes, money goes along. Money fixes. Money 100% can fix many of our problems, right? It can lower our costs from.
But ain't just about liquidity though. It's also a combination of management and investment.
I think investment is really the key word, because I think there's such a huge difference between, you can throw money at a problem, but again, if all you're doing is throwing money just to cover a shortfall, you're not really fixing the problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like if all you're doing is just trying to meet your monthly obligations.
That's the difference between a band-aid and surgery.
Exactly. And so, where we look at funding, but at the same time too, we have to be realistic. Like while we are getting significant pots of funding for, whether it be grants, whether it be federal resources, whether it be low cost financing, mm-hmm. incentives, like while those certainly exist, there's still going to be costs associated with every aspect of the transition, whether it be from planning the transition, executing it. It's not just I'm not saying that there's not a number out there, but I'm not saying we're sitting on, okay, if we had X amount, all problems have resolved. Like, I mean,
let me ask this question, because I brought this up to you before and I want to bring it up again now, because of our unique circumstance as an insular position, along with Samoa, American Samoa, CNMI, Guam, and Puerto Rico, but they are so large, they are not looked at as a true insular position, even though they are, because we're talking 4,000 square miles compared to, in our case, 130, mm-hmm. 150 in Guam, 68 here, all that stuff, right? because we don't have grid capability like an Ohio would have with New York, can't we make, excuse me, a legislative argument for the federal government to partially, if not fully, subsidize our energy costs?
There's not a, I can't think of a world where that would be accepted. That's not something I think is a, and I'll be honest, I don't think that's necessary. I'll just be frank. This is, you know, I often tell people.
But we don't have grid capability.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that we can't. And like, here's the thing. Will we ever be sitting on the 7 cent a kilowatt hour that Tennessee Valley Authority is able to offer? No.
No.
Right? Like that, I mean, like, or the likelihood, maybe not in our lifetime. Maybe there's a world, maybe there's a quantum leap in energy.
Yeah, but you use that word remote, right? And remote means isolated. And that should, because of its uniqueness, allow for some type of support. I mean, I would want to think that we're not dependent on the federal government.
I think that's my challenge with it, because it comes back to the sustainability piece, right? Of course, if that support came, maybe there's an immediate relief that everybody can have today.
Mm-hmm.
But when you become dependent on those immediate release, then again, you're not putting the systems in place to have the long-term sustainability. Like, we're not just thinking of, like, we shouldn't just be thinking about it for us today, tomorrow, I want my bill to be better. Like, we should be thinking about is how do we get to a point where this is sustainable, not just for this generation, but for generations to come. And there's no reason why, yes, we are remote, but we also are small. I mean, that's actually the benefit we have over Puerto Rico. We're not, like, this is, yes, we have complex terrain and certainly some logistical challenges to power delivery, and we're in a vulnerable region. So, I mean, there are, the cards are certainly not always in our favor, but mm-hmm. they also aren't insurmountable either, right? Like, there is
I like that thinking. I like that vision. I like that belief, right, that they're not insurmountable. But at the same time, we got to be realistic, though. You know what I'm saying? For example, you know, states claim that they like their own state. And we're going to a break now. We're different in Pennsylvania from we are in Ohio, but when it comes to electricity, they share an infrastructure to reduce costs.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's why I asked the question with that part. So when we come back and take a break, I want you to explain why the authority felt inclined to or felt the need to go the rolling power outages part going forward. Take a break. Be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, we give you a chance to impress your friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists. You'll be the life of the party. Or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Join us on an Amazon River voyage to romance with a brand new couple, an older cantankerous couple, and the great opera diva Florencia Grimaldi in search of the lover she lost. It's the Met premiere of its first Spanish-language opera in 100 years, starring the acclaimed Eileen Perez and conducted by Yannick Nezet-Séguin. Look for Daniel Catan's magical Florencia en el Amazonas on great performances at the Met.
Tune in April 25th at 9 p.m. on WTJX-TV Channel 12.